You are listening to Bit Podcast, a business podcast series produced by Bitpod on behalf of PKF Malta. This series is brought to you by Bitpod's co-founder, Dr. Marilyn Formosa.
Hello and welcome to our Bitpod listeners. This is Colette Manjon and today I will be taking over host duties of your usual host, Dr. Marilyn Formosa. We welcome with us our special repeat guest, our economist at PKF Malta, Ms. Miriam Sultana. Miriam heads the economics department at PKF Malta, and today she will be speaking to us about the latest economic developments. Welcome, Miriam. We are very glad to have you with us today.
Hello, Colette. Thank you very much for inviting me again. I hope that this session will be fruitful to all of our listeners.
So, in our last Bitpod together, you have already discussed the economic impact of COVID-19 from a social and economic perspective. However, for the benefit of our listeners, what are the most recent updates for Malta in this aspect?
So we are now 6 months in the pandemic, similar to the rest of Europe. And if we were to give a little bit of a summary in terms of measures, Malta back in March acted very quickly. To give a little bit of a timeline, on the 13th of March, we saw schools, universities and childcare centers closing down only 6 days after the first case of the virus was reported in Malta. Then on the 16th of March, we saw the closure of bars, restaurants and gyms. Then on the 20th of March, the airport was shut, which caused a huge economic impact to our local economy, as we discussed in our previous Bitpod. And then on the 23rd March, the non-essential retail outlets such as beauty therapists, hairdressers, nail salons and clothes stores were also shut. On the 30th of March then, group gatherings were started to be limited as well to 3 people, then 4 people, then 6 people. So we had a little bit of drastic measures in March. Then, in May and June, the government started to reopen up the economy. And in 4th May, non-essential retail outlets started to welcome customers again. And on the 22nd of May, the second batch of non-essential outlets reopened again. We saw hairdressers, beauty salons, and health services and clinics reopen again with mitigation measures. On the 5th June, remaining establishments continued to open, including bars and gyms, and also non-contact sports competitions were also reallowed. On the 13th of June, then, we saw that Korea announced that mass and religious services could resume. And on the 1st July, the golden date, the summer school, Skola Saif, reopened, and also the airport opened for passengers from 19 countries. In July, contact sports was also allowed back again. Then, once mass events were allowed, although there were meant to be social distancing measures in place, which unfortunately these were not adequately enforced. With barely active cases back in July, unfortunately, mass events turned the page. And as a result, now we are experiencing the so-called second wave. A single case was registered on the 23rd July, and basically it changed the whole scenario as it transpired that a person that attended a weekend-long party at a hotel was positive, and obviously number of cases started to rise again very, very quickly. Also, as a result, local festas were needed to be stopped again because these became the center of a number of cases as well. As at today, unfortunately, the picture is not as positive as it was in March. We've had a number of deaths, actually 32 deaths so far as of today, and most of them are of an old age, and we have reported over 3,000 cases, which is substantial for our little country. At the moment, we have around 600 active cases. Compared to the rest of Europe, the situation deteriorated and we are still registering a high number of cases in our country. In fact, the ECDC is reporting that we have 132 cases per 100,000 population, which is quite substantial. So we have moved from being an exemplary country to one which situation deteriorated very, very rapidly. This, of course, caused a number of social repercussions. As a response to the surge in cases from July onwards, there was industrial action, which was taken by unions representing doctors, nurses, and pharmacists. And as a result, then on the 17th of August, clubs and bars were shut down once more, and mass gatherings were restricted once again to a maximum of 15 persons. A new fine was also added in August because people weren't adhering to the rules of mask if they are caught not wearing a mask. From a social perspective, this brought a new level of anxiety, particularly for those people who had planned events, be it of a small or a large nature, such as weddings. We have to bear in mind that a number of couples had already postponed their wedding back in March and April of this year to a later date. So these couples had to make rearrangements and incur extra costs in order to rearrange their wedding setups, from stand-up functions to sit-down meals. That, of course, entails a lot of work. Also, small events such as confirmation or Holy Communion parties were also becoming problematic, as clusters from these small gatherings were observed during August as well. Of course, these events, coupled with the fact that people are becoming less careful sometimes because they're taking the virus as being non-existent, and coupled also with the fact that it is summer and people tend to gather together, this led to the average age of persons infected with the newly found virus to go up at around 45 years of age. So we also have witnessed a number of cases in old people's homes, which as a result, we all know that old people are the most vulnerable group. This resulted in a number of deaths as well, unfortunately. Coupled with that, visiting relatives or friends at the hospital or care homes has also become problematic, creating also anxieties amongst families, particularly those who have relatives or friends in such institutions. So obviously, people who have their loved ones who are sick or they are in their deathbeds, they cannot obviously visit them as they please, because hours are limited. This also creates mental issues and loneliness for patients, in fact.
Thank you, Miriam, for that thorough update. So let's delve further into the incentives. A number of incentives and schemes were issued or announced by the Maltese government, including the famous 100 euro vouchers. What were its economic effects?
Yes, back in June, the government announced that everyone over the age of 16 will receive 100 euro worth of vouchers in order to boost domestic demand, particularly because of the partial lockdown in response to the COVID-19 pandemic. Out of the 100 euro, 80 euro are to be spent on restaurants, hotels and bars, and 20 euro on retail outlets, which were forced to be closed by public health authorities during the partial lockdown months. The validity of the vouchers was then extended from the end of September till the end of October. There are also hints that these will be extended with the next budget. However, the Prime Minister last Sunday, when speaking during an interview on a local TV station, in fact mentioned that there are no promises regarding this. However, he mentioned that the wage supplement scheme, which was discussed in our previous Bitpod by Claudia, is in fact going to be extended, which will help those who have been unemployed. Speaking about a little bit about the success of the vouchers, by late August, the Maltese government reported that 97.6 of eligible Maltese residents and 61.6 of EU residents and also 79.4 of non-EU residents, in fact, received their vouchers. And this constitutes 2.23 million 20 euro vouchers in value. The total of the scheme amounts to 44.6 million in value. The government announced that, as at the beginning of September, 1.29 million vouchers have actually been used. When we speak about the blue vouchers, those which were allowed to be spent on retail services, consumers have spent 25.8 million in the 100 euro vouchers, plus an additional 11.5 million for a total of 37.3 million, out of which 5.7 million constitute as VAT revenue. For the blue vouchers, the most popular types of establishments on which the vouchers were used were four-star accommodation and also retail groups. The highest usage of the vouchers was in fact during the Santa Maria week. These vouchers is expected generated additional expenditure. We all know that if you have a 20 euro voucher, you don't spend 20 euro, but you tend to spend more than the allotted amount on the voucher. For the red vouchers, an additional 7 euro 16 cents was spent with every 20 euro vouchers. And this meant that an additional 7.7 million were spent by consumers over and above the amount originally injected by the government. For the blue vouchers, an extra 16 euro and 42 cents were spent with every 20 euro voucher, and we generated an additional 3.8 million in euros spent by consumers in the economy.
And now for a quick intermission.
At PKF Malta, we offer a full range of immigration solutions and have dedicated ourselves to meeting excellence as a standard every time. This year, our VIP client handling division celebrates 7 years of success, gratitude, friendship, and trust. Our current offering covers second passport and permanent residence options for the following countries: Malta, Bulgaria, Turkey, the Caribbean islands of St. Kitts, Dominica, and Grenada, as well as E2 business visa applications for the US and a vetted EB5 investment option through our trusted partners. Be a part of our success story. Get in touch with PKF Malta today.
Very interesting indeed. Moving on. So how did the economy fare post the partial lockdown during March to May this year?
Okay, so if we were to mention some points regarding GDP, unemployment and inflation, we can see unfortunately that there has been some differences when compared to last year. So in terms of gross value added, which represents the primary incomes for all economic sectors, as economists, we use this as a measure of welfare for a country. Quarter of 2020, from April to June, the country's gross value added fell by 13.8% in nominal terms, which means including any inflationary effects, when compared to the same period of last year. So this is quite substantial. And this decline was mainly due to general contractions across all the main sectors of the economy. As we spoke last time, and as expected, most predominantly the services sector contracted quite substantially, particularly as a result of declines in the accommodation and food service activities. During this period, we all know that the sector was closed or operating at minimum levels. Both domestic and external demand unfortunately decreased, as we all know, and production diminished in volume terms across all the main sectors of the economy, including agriculture and fishing industry and also construction and services. During the same period, demand driven by household consumption also declined because most of the people were confined in their homes, and government expenditure increased substantially by 11.9%. Also, exports and imports of goods and services declined during the same period. We can see, therefore, that there has been a substantial change in the figures when compared to quarter one of the same year in 2020, whereby positive economic growth was registered. When it comes to unemployment, we all know that during the partial lockdown months, a number of employees became redundant or unemployed. And using the labor force survey, as reported by the NSO, unemployment levels increased from 3.5% registered in February up to 4.5% in May, then 4.3% in June, and then again 4.1% in July. To be fair, we are seeing a little bit of a slowdown in the rate of unemployment in July, but 4.1% is still considered to be high, when in fact previously we had lower figures. This represents the number of unemployed persons, which are aged between 15 to 74 years, as a percentage of the labor force. However, we should also consider that as a result of the wage supplement scheme and the parental benefit scheme, the unemployment percentage could have been potentially greater, as these two schemes provided relief during the COVID-19 partial lockdown. The government also mentioned that the main sectors from which companies applied for the wage supplement scheme were from the accommodation and food service activities, and also the wholesale and retail trade sector and the administration and support services. As explained in my previous BitPod regarding the topic, these sectors were heavily hit, particularly as their demand for such services is also partially driven by tourism, who we all know has been negatively impacted. With respect to the parental benefit scheme, which scheme assisted working parents within the private sector, who could not go out to work or carry out their usual functions through teleworking, during the period of March and July, 4,500 parents benefited from the scheme as well. So these measures contributed to lowering the percentage amount of unemployment. We must remember that government assistance is a form of injection within the economy. It is in the form of subsidies or direct cash out. So the work of such fiscal policies in theory and in economic terms is to boost the circular flow of income and alleviate partially the impact of substantial and unexpected shocks to the economic system. We must remember that such an event, the COVID-19 pandemic, is a big shock to our system, not only of Malta, but also all of the world. Sometimes government assistance is necessary. Such injections and such reliefs from the government are expected to have multiplied expansion on GDP, which would not have occurred if government expenditure did not take effect. If we have had to look at another macroeconomic indicator, which is important, inflation, looking at the 12-month moving average retail price index as at July 2020, it was 1.11%. And the highest inflation rates were registered in the food groups, which also include restaurants and takeaways. Coupled with this, high inflation was also registered in the clothing, footwear, personal care, and health categories. The inflation within the food group category was registered due to higher prices of milk products as well. There were also increases in the prices of garments and hairdressing services. Here we must remember, and there is a simple explanation behind the inflation figure, that lower production both in Malta and abroad during the COVID-19 months resulted in less items become available, pushing prices up. This is what is called in economic theory a type of demand pull inflation, whereby as demand is faster than the supply, this results in fewer imports. We must also remember that COVID-19 and all the measures which were implemented also pushed up the cost, particularly for hairdressers, nail and beauty salons, who had to invest substantially in order to abide with the health authorities' instructions in order to be able to welcome their clients. This was, unfortunately, most of the time passed on to consumers in the form of higher charges on their services. This is in economics is what is known as cost push inflation. However, last but not least, looking on a more positive note, Malta has recently had its A long-term credit rating reconfirmed by Standard & Poor's, which mentioned that the country's outlook remained stable. For those who aren't familiar with such credit ratings, these are credit score ratings that are issued by business intelligence companies in order to describe the general creditworthiness of a company, city, or a country. These are particularly important because they generally affect the cost of borrowing for a country. And for countries, these business intelligence companies provide an assessment of how likely a country will default on its sovereign debt. And it also assesses whether the country's government has a stable and sustainable fiscal policy. It also looks at its economic strength and growth prospects, foreign direct investment, and whether the central bank is actually functioning properly. From a positive note, having our credit rating reaffirmed is a good indicator.
Very insightful, thank you. And with regards to the near future, what are the government plans in the upcoming national budget?
So, at this point in time, the government has only issued a pre-budget document, which was issued in mid-September, and unfortunately doesn't provide much insight at this point in time. However, usually the government issues a pre-budget document in order to serve as a platform to discuss with the other stakeholders in the economy. The main aim of the government at this point in time is to ensure a speedy recovery of all the economic sectors, particularly those which were negatively hit. In this pre-budget document specifically, the government outlines 10 priority areas, which include the sustaining of existing economic sectors and the strengthening of new technology sectors. The document also mentions that the government will be drafting a vision for the Maltese economy for the next decade and a three-year strategy. So we look forward to that because I think that such strategies are lacking. We will have to see what this program entails. It also promises the strengthening of our Malta, which we all know had some issues in the past few years. And it also mentions the setting up of a building and construction authority. This is very important, particularly as in Malta, the building industry has flourished in the last 3 years. And unfortunately, sometimes it's observed that one hand does not know what the other hand is doing. So we hope that this authority will serve this purpose and also regulate even further what is going on within the industry, particularly in terms of their obligations, such as occupational health and safety, which we all know is very important. Today, in fact, there was another debt connected with occupational health and safety, the environment, and also noise pollution. The government also, interestingly, announced a number of artificial intelligence-related projects, particularly in the field of esports and video game development. We must remember that artificial intelligence is becoming even more ingrained in our daily lives and becoming even more important as automation becomes a part of our work and personal life at home. Regarding quantum and high-performance computing, as well as initiatives regarding the distributed ledger technology are also being proposed. The government, through this budget, is also introducing further measures in order to strengthen social welfare and assist local communities, particularly given the current context we are living. We need to remember that the partial lockdown caused a number of people to be temporarily inactive, or some of them even lost their jobs permanently. So through this budget, we hope that this will be corrected and further measures at the cost of sustainability of public finances will have to be introduced. Interestingly and most importantly, through this pre-budget document, the government is also announcing a number of sustainable development related measures. Remember that the environmental crisis has not disappeared, and the government should be committed towards launching a national strategy for sustainable development. Amongst the initiatives, government mentions the use of clean transport, which promotes the use of less polluting vehicles and encourages the use of public transport. As I said before, the environment is very important because we all know that the sustainability of resources is of utmost importance, particularly as non-renewable sources across the world are becoming depleted.
Thank you, Miriam. Any final comments you'd like to share?
So, first of all, I hope this was an interesting session to all of our listeners, particularly from the business field. I think now the priority at this point in time is to get the economy up and running. We have already seen that the government is pushing towards increasing spending power. We have seen the Ministry for Finance say that now spending is the time to spend and not the time to save. COVID-19, along with other recent political events, which happened in 2020 earlier on, have negatively impacted our economy. Social welfare is particularly important. We have to consider the fact that now going forward, since schools are going to open shortly, the number of cases are expected to increase. So this might suppress even further aggregate demand, particularly for restaurants and hotel services. However, a balance is important as well. We need to keep in mind that we need to carry on. Unfortunately, this situation is going to take a little bit of time, maybe months, maybe years, we don't know. And coupled with that, we need to create a balance in our life. We need to enjoy life, but at the same time, be careful. Of a macro level, there becomes an issue of the sustainability of public finances. So the government cannot continue forking out benefits. I mean, the government deficit is expected to range at 8.7% of GDP in 2020 because of the COVID-19 pandemic, and this negative government balance is expected to improve to 4% of GDP in 2021. I mean, when compared to last year, this is quite a negative turn. We should also keep in mind that there are also EU funds made available to us. Now, for the next programming period between 2021 and 2027, we have around 2.25 billion in EU funds allocated for our country. 1.92 billion of these are allocated from the EU's core budget and 327 million in grants from the post-COVID-19 recovery package of the European Union. We should remember that we are net beneficiaries of these EU funds, so we contribute less than we actually receive, by around 1 billion. Hopefully, the government makes use of these resources wisely to the benefit of our economy. I think this is all I have to say for today, Colette. I hope this has been truly an interesting update to all of our listeners. And I look forward to update you with further developments in due course.
Thank you, Miriam. I believe it has been a very fruitful session, one which our listeners will truly find beneficial. Thank you for taking the time to update us with all the economic impacts of COVID-19. As we come to a close of this session, may I remind our listeners to subscribe to our socials. You can find us on Facebook, LinkedIn, Instagram, and Spotify. See you on our next BitPod session. Until then, take care and stay safe.
Thank you for listening to BitPodcast. If you like this episode, be sure to subscribe and follow us on Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter.